Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always glad when you can join us. I'd also like to welcome our guest presenters, which there are many today, and thank them for their participation. This task force meeting is open to the public, and your comments are welcome in Zoom chat throughout the meeting or during the public comment period that is held around 11:50 Eastern Time this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members. So when I call your name, please let us know if you are here. And I'll begin with our co-chairs, Hans Baltendyk.
Good morning.
Holly Spiro.
Good morning, everyone.
Pooja Babra.
Good morning.
With Chris Blackley.
Good morning, everybody.
Isla Blend is not able to join us today. David Butler. Steve Eichner.
Good morning from the great state of Texas.
Raj Gadbarty. Ali Gudlapalli.
Good morning.
Or Lapalli. I always say your name wrong, Adi. Sorry.
Thank you.
I'll get it right one of these days after 2.5 years I've been here. Jim Jurgis. And Summer Kalan and Stephen Lane are not able to join us today. Meg Marshall.
Good morning.
Anna McAllister. Devin McGraw is also not able to join us. Ethan Mehta.
Good morning.
Dustin Neal.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira. Nirish Sundarrajan.
Good morning.
Scott Robertson.
Good morning.
Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Phil Sutherland. Christian Tadris.
Hello to all.
Cheryl Turney. And Afton Wagner.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, everyone. Now please join me in welcoming Hans and Shelley for their opening remarks.
Hans, you can go first, and then I'll do the charges and get us going.
Sounds good. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this next meeting, and today we're going to shift to the second task that Shelley is going to introduce in a moment. Looking forward to that discussion and the presenters that we have today. Also, welcome to those on the call from the public. If you are new on the call, you'll see that there is the opportunity to chat, and you're welcome to do that. There's a lively debate always going on in the chat. We capture that. We hold on to it as well. But any additional comments, if you you would wait until the public comment and can then further emphasize or other highlight your perspective. So everybody looking forward to the overviews and the subsequent discussion to that. Welcome.
Thank you, Hans. So we're now moving. We just finished topic one, which was our public health emergency use authorization and prescribing authorities. We are now moving to topic two, identifying opportunities and recommendations to improve interoperability between pharmacy constituents, prescribers, pharmacists, pharmacy benefit managers, dispensers, payers, intermediaries, prescription drug monitoring programs, public health agencies, HIEs, third-party services, providers, consumers, et cetera, and all four pharmacy-based clinical services and care coordination. So this is what we're moving to next, which is more talking about the clinical services that pharmacists provide, how the standards work within that. We have four presenters today. We have Kim Boyd, president of Boyd Consulting Group. We also have Steve Molinex, who is the senior vice president of public policy and industry relationships with NCPDP, the National Council for Prescription Drug Programs. And we have Rick Sage, who is the executive vice president of innovation and standards development from NCPDP, and Josh Holland. Dr. Holland is the senior vice president of clinical strategy and product with Red Sales Technology. And with that, after we go through the presentations, we will have a discussion, and then we will go to public comment. And if any time is remaining, we will look at our spreadsheet. So welcome everyone, and I think we can go to progress the slides. I think we went over this slide also, so you can see where we are at on our particular topic. Can you stop there? And I'll also just put the subcategories under our topic too, just to let everybody know how can ONC help facilitate adoption and use to support data exchange for pharmacy-based clinical services, which priority pharmacy-based clinical service clinical use cases should ONC focus on for short-term and long-term? What technology gaps exist for pharmacy to participate in value-based care? And what can ONC do to address drug inventory transparencies for prescribers and consumers? I'm going to remind all the task force members that our goal is to create recommendations. Those recommendations we will be working on over these next four calls. Just a reminder, we will be not meeting next week, but we'll be meeting the following week. So be prepared to add to the spreadsheet your recommendations. We are capturing the information that is in the chat, and that's really important because then that does help us. We will talk later about the spreadsheet and some of the tracking that we're doing in terms of assuring that those recommendations for your discussions are prompted to you. So you'll be getting emails if you have had some ideas that we want recommendations, especially in public health. We will be finishing up our public health recommendations over the next couple of weeks as we move to topic two. So we can progress to the next slide. So as I said before, welcome Kim, I believe is up first. So let's go to the slides and the presentation. Kim, I hope you're on.
I am on, Shelley, thank you.
Great.
So good morning, Task Force members. I wanna thank you for this opportunity. Today, I'm excited to discuss the topic of standards for clinical messaging and interoperability between pharmacists and other healthcare providers. As this task force is well aware, interoperability in healthcare is vital for effective communication and coordination of care. NCPDP standards can play a crucial role in facilitating exchange of patient clinical care information between pharmacies, pharmacists, and other healthcare providers. Next, please. So before we explore the opportunities to improve pharmacy interoperability, let's first address the hindrances we face in challenging and achieving seamless data exchange between pharmacists and other healthcare providers. The first thing I want to point out is pharmacy interoperability faces hindrances due to varying systems and technologies, with pharmacies and healthcare providers using different EHRs and HIT solutions. There's also inconsistent data standardization and coding systems, which create challenges in accurately interpreting and exchanging information between pharmacies and primary care systems. There are also varying workflows and system configurations, which pose integration challenges, which impede the smooth exchange of information. And capturing patient consent, which has been mentioned with this task force before, capturing that consent for data sharing for pharmacies and pharmacists is crucial, but there is also added complexity to achieving this seamless capturing and information exchange of patient consent. So to improve pharmacy interoperability, we need to address these challenges and work towards standardized data formats and streamlined workflows for efficient data exchange. Next, please. So despite the challenges, NCPDP standards do offer promising solutions for pharmacy interoperability. The NCPDP telecommunications standard facilitates the exchange of clinical messages between pharmacists and providers, with 62% of the data elements needed for pharmacist-involved value-based arrangements being present. The NCPDP script standard also enables electronic prescription transmission, and that standard contains 42% of the identified clinical data elements needed for clinical data exchange relative to value of care. The NCPDP HL7 eCare Plan supports care plan exchange between healthcare providers, including pharmacists, with 67% of the necessary clinical data elements present in the eCare Plan. NCPDP Strategic Planning Committee and the VBA Subcommittee are conducting a second gap analysis to further evaluate closing data gaps and enhancing interoperability. Next, please. This graphic, which was created by NCPDP's VBA subcommittee, which can be reviewed in depth by the task force at a later date, is an overview of the workflow model for the pharmacist e-care plan and in support of pharmacists involved in value-based arrangements. The workflow for the e-care plan begins with the pharmacist communicating to a primary care provider a comprehensive summary of patient-specific care recommendations. Next, please. And regarding the telecommunication and script standards, which I mentioned earlier as standards that can support the sharing of clinical information, the following is a simplified workflow for the task force to review in greater depth at your convenience. Next, please. There are opportunities that lie ahead for improving interoperability of pharmacy-based clinical services, such as standardization with messaging formats, promoting the adoption of pharmacy EHRs, workflow integration with other EHRs, and data quality improvements to ensure seamless care coordination and reliable information exchange between pharmacists and other stakeholders. Next, please. And the ONC does play a crucial role in advancing interoperability in pharmacy-based clinical services. And here are some ways the ONC can contribute to that advancement. Providing guidance in education and resources on clinical messaging integration, continuing to foster collaboration among all stakeholders, ensuring everyone's needs are considered, actively engaging in future standards development at NCPDP, establishing and enforcing data exchange standards to ensure seamless communication between pharmacy EHRs and provider EHRs, offer incentives and funding to encourage adoption of fluid data exchange in pharmacy EHR specifically, and advance additional policies and provide education to increase awareness and adoption of interoperable systems. Next, please. In conclusion, bridging the gaps in data and systems and harnessing the potential of NCPDP standards for clinical messaging between pharmacists and other healthcare providers is crucial for enhancing patient care and coordination. Through proactive measures to address challenges, seizing those opportunities, and leveraging the guidance and support of the ONC, we can pave the way for a more interconnected and efficient healthcare system. Collectively, we all possess the ability to create a connective and collaborative healthcare ecosystem where pharmacists and providers seamlessly exchange information and enable informed decision-making and ultimately delivering superior care to patients. So I want to thank you for your time and attention. I know I only had about 5 minutes. I know this was quick, so I'm open to any questions you may have.
I think we're going to hold all questions until after all the presentations. So thank you, Kim, and we will go on to our next presentation from Steve and Rick.
Great. Thanks, Shelley. Thanks, Tricia Lee and Hans, for the opportunity to present NCPDP's perspective regarding standard development interoperability in a very rapidly changing healthcare environment. As you mentioned, Rick and I will try to cover at least three things in the next 5 minutes. We want to highlight several of NCPDP's strategic initiatives currently embedded in our three-year strategic plan, and those actually drive our operational efforts in the within the organization, and then identify the rationale for enhanced standards development and maintaining interoperability as we accommodate this movement toward pharmacist-provided clinical services. And then lastly, and Rick will come in and he'll talk more specifically about the what and the how NCPDP is currently addressing this transition, both today and what our plans are for the future. So I'm going to get right into it. Next slide, please. Our strategic initiatives. Again, the central purpose within NCPDP is to standardize the exchange of healthcare information to improve outcomes. And we, in doing that, we have made at least three commitments to the healthcare industry. And one is interoperability, one is health equity, and then there's a commitment to public health as well. And then in addition to that, and primarily through the NCPDP Foundation, we have made a strong commitment to looking at patient safety, access to care, and the role and value of the pharmacist in both of those. Next slide, please. As NCPDP works to fulfill its strategic plan and accommodate this transition that I mentioned toward more pharmacists providing clinical services, we are mindful of many of the important factors, some of which are mentioned on this slide. And to distill it down, we really are looking at keeping the advantages of existing standards, maximizing interoperability via APIs and through enhanced collaboration with our friends in the SDO environment. And we already, as you know, have good examples of having done that. Lastly, we are attempting to minimize any sort of marketplace disruption during this transition process, trying to minimize any rip and replace if at all possible. And then lastly, we're very mindful of the need to reduce provider burden. So we're asking ourselves the questions constantly, are we making the process better, faster, or cheaper along the way? With that, I'm going to kick it over to Rick. Now he's going to share some of the specific actions that have already been initiated at NCPDP for sort of the current needs that as we see them. And then I'm going to, and then also as we prepare for the future. So Rick, you want to take it?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. And thank you all for allowing us a few minutes this morning to tell you more about what's going on within the standards development and interoperability within pharmacy and healthcare. As Kim and Steve both mentioned, the opportunities and movement that's being made right now to allow pharmacies to participate in non-dispensing opportunities and how we can develop the standards to support these types of opportunities and encourage the interface into all of healthcare is so important to us. I'll be talking about standards development. I'll also be mentioning about interoperability work that we're doing, as well as looking at and focusing on the technology that allows all these functions to work, utilizing APIs and other technology that's important in the healthcare environment. NCPDP, newly formed Workgroup 20, which is which we're calling Coordination of Care and Innovation, which places creates a place for the focus of industry interoperability and pharmacy-based clinical services and care coordination. This work group is targeting stakeholders throughout the healthcare industry for collaboration on systems improvement throughout the exchange of standardized clinical data. NCPDP believes that with this work group focused on clinical and collaboration and set of specific financial standards, we'll be able to advance the development and the use of healthcare technology capabilities throughout the industry. I'm sorry, if you could advance the slide one, I apologize for that. This talks about the areas in which our initiatives are focused for our new work group called Coordination of Care and Innovation, looking at things like value-based care, social determinants of health, our precision medicine, health equity, a lot of the things that Kim and Steve had both mentioned as well, and collaboration within the NCPDP standards and other organizations and standards that are available to move our healthcare forward. Next slide. NCPDP is committed and staying focused on the current initiatives throughout the healthcare industry. This graphic that you can take a look at and ask further questions at a later time highlights the areas within NCPDP that supports the initiatives, as well as a crosswalk and pollination with those with HL7. in June of 2021, HL7 co-authored a white paper with NCPDP focused on the standardized medication profile, as well as currently exploring other areas where NCPDP can fill gaps to utilize data for better healthcare. We need ONC's support for NCPDP and all healthcare standard organizations for the exchange of this clinical data. Next slide.
Just a reminder, you need to wrap it up really quick.
Okay. NCPDP is looking to modernize their ability to support APIs. So NCPDP has put together a member source API solution, which is available to members as a member-driven API to support the industry standards, including our script, a real-time prescription benefit standard, specialized standard, as well as the future with our telecom standards and as we migrate to JSON. So a lot of information on here. I'll stop now, open for any questions. But as you can see through the presentations this morning, NCPDP continues to look at how we can move towards clinical and support the interoperability throughout the healthcare.
Great. I think we're going to hold off questions unless you have chat. You have some questions, please put it in the chat and we can continue on with our next presentation. Thank you, Rick and Steve.
Thank you.
Josh?
All right. The beauty of going last is I get to tell everybody that I agree explicitly with everything that's already been said, and I get to end with something that's slightly controversial. So I focused a little bit on what messaging looks like today. And one of the things that's really important to remember is we can do things back and forth between pharmacy and patient, hospital and patient. It's functional, but it's proprietary, right? Everybody went out and built their own system, my company included. We all did it, right? And partly because of that, it's fragmented and it doesn't communicate well with others. NCPDP does a great job, prescriber to pharmacy, with saying how you're going to send a prescription from a prescriber to a pharmacy. But beyond that, it's basically the Wild West. And then we did direct messaging, but it was not widely implemented. And everybody consumes it a little bit differently. So those create a bunch of weird little problems in the system. Next slide. So where we want to be able to go, and this is where patients want, right? You want a near real-time asynchronous communication between a provider or groups of providers, right? We've all been thinking about this as a one-to-one communication method. It's not. It's a one-to-many, right? So one of the things in just kind of methodology that looks and feels similar, everybody can use email or Slack or Teams or whatever it looks like. Those are beautiful implementations of asynchronous communication transfers. You can talk about, you can send video messages, you can send text messages, you can send documents. All of it works. There's a clear way that this is a winner. Everybody does it. Everybody's familiar with it. We should be able to share medical records and content through channels similar to that. But we need a couple of things in place. And these two things have been universally brought up. I'm not the first person to think about it, and almost always shut down, right? A universal patient identifier is the single thing that ties all that together. I need to be able to know that the person at this hospital is the same person in this public health registry that's also at my pharmacy, right? Having a universal patient identifier that's not a probabilistic match. Everybody's trying to kind of piecemeal things together. I think we need to push for a universal patient identifier that is government sponsored and not like a social security number, not used for other things, right? The Medicare beneficiary ID got close, but it's only for Medicare patients. You need something like that for everybody to identify all the players in the system. And direct secure messaging has to be universally implemented and consumed. You have to do it, right? It's the same reason the internet works. Every single player uses TCP/IP protocol. If you don't want to use that, you don't use the internet. We need something very similar to tie all of these really good standards we have together, like the script standard and the D.0 standard, soon to be F4, and then tell people exactly how you're going to use it. You get those two things into place, and being able to share information across the entire ecosystem almost becomes trivial. And then the last part about that is if you tie those two together, the identifier and the message, think about how easy it would be for a prescriber to send a prescription over to a pharmacy and be able to say, all right, I have this order, I have this standard, and now I have an ID. I'm going to start a conversation with that doctor about, you know, why are they taking it? Let's get that PA done quickly. And then you could link that to a lab and query those lab results based off of that patient. It creates this really, really quick web of exchange. And all of that's possible through those two things that we haven't done yet. Okay. I think next, So basically, got weird with the colors, but I kind of graphically put that together with how it might look. You can see information flowing. If all of that's tied together with an ID through some kind of common interface, I tried to make ours as generic as possible, so it's not branded in any way. But you can,
Josh, you've got 1 minute.
No problem. I'll do it in 20 seconds. The whole point of this is just to say, passing that information through with a common identifier into a method or an interface that people recognize and can use, it creates this web that you can pass all of those different types of standardized payloads instantly through the system. So there's my soapbox. Thank you for your time.
Okay, so let's go to our discussion. I think it's important that we have all of our presentations. We're basically talking about the same topic. And so raise hands. And I see that Hans is up first. And please continue to put your comments in the chat. That's both for our task force members and also for the public. So please keep the chat going. And Hans, you have the first question.
Thank you. And thank you for everybody for the updates and the perspectives that have been raised. I have a couple of questions across, but I'll start with one. Because our last speaker, Josh Howland, introduced a controversial topic. I'm wondering whether my question is going to become controversial, in a way there. I'm curious. I hear a strong emphasis on a national unique patient identifier. I don't think anybody will argue with that. Is that how do we do that in a way that we always know we can get a complete record and otherwise? So no, definitely that's not controversial in that regard. Or in any other regard in that sense. But you are emphasizing asynchronous communication using direct. And we hear a lot in the industry about FHIR, RESTful APIs, other things. So I'm kind of curious in that context, when we talk standards, which area should we support? Should we spend more time on some of the RESTful APIs? Should we spend more time on messaging? Should we do both or otherwise? How are you looking at that to complement the variety of ways in which we need to communicate? Is it one the other, or is it a combination of the above? And if so, what do you think that combination is to have that ongoing conversation between providers, pharmacists, patients, et cetera? What are your thoughts on that, on where we need to focus?
That's a lot. I think the answer is both, right? You need those RESTful APIs to be able to pull information from systems in a way that makes sense to those systems. JSON's a great example. If a system doesn't understand a specific thing, it'll skip over it, but pull the things it needs. Historically, that had been you'd have to create these custom bespoke data feeds. That's not functional. But being able to say, I can identify that Josh Howland is the same person at multiple systems, and then being able to get in touch with that provider using a direct address. You don't have to have a message, doesn't have to be words between two humans. A message can be a system reaching out and saying, I'm reaching out to this direct ID. I need this group of information, pull this JSON API. And if you don't do both, you just have these partial effects across the system. So the answer is definitively both.
Thank you.
Pooja.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Thanks for your great presentations. So I have two topics. One is the UPI, and I think Christian actually put something in the chat. I would love to hear from the NCPDP folks a little bit more about the UPI. But before we do that, the other thing, Kim, you had in the chat talked about ADT notifications. And I'm also curious about, that's, you know, a topic I think that's coming up at the new work group that was mentioned from NCPDP. That's been something I've been thinking about in terms of, you know, does it make sense for, from a care coordination standpoint, you know, we send ADT notifications, right, from when a patient's getting discharged from the hospital to providers. Is there a potential to be able to send ADT notifications to pharmacists? I'd love to hear kind of thoughts on that, primarily just, you know, in that care coordination. I just don't know, you know, enough. And I thought it was part of the direct messaging, maybe it's separately, but I'm curious about that as well. And then I would love to hear about the UPI.
Tricia, excuse me, Pooja, I think there was a question to me about ADTs, right?
Sorry, I went back on mute. Yes, correct.
Yeah. So you're correct. And Rick mentioned earlier, you know, the new coordination of care and innovation working group that is forming at NCPDP to look at how we can, you know, accelerate, you know, use cases focused on transitions of care. And, you know, Pooja, you know, I think you even brought that up as one of the members of NCPDP. You know, I think it will be an exceptional process in which to get these patient discharge and transitions of care to pharmacists. I think it's something that is desperately needed. So pharmacists can engage as part of the whole care team to ensure that patients successfully transition, and you can reduce, you know, readmissions to hospitals. You can reduce, you know, acute situations with the patient. I think getting that information to the pharmacist will be critical. I support that. And I think the new working group will focus on that. And I think we'll find that we will see great success in that. There are already entities in healthcare today who are doing some of that, but it is a pretty significant technical lift and, you know, contracting lift and a BAA process in which to get it. But once you have it in hand, then you are able to assimilate analysis around success for pharmacists to reduce those hospital admissions and to reduce those acute phases of care that cost healthcare a lot and also is not a positive for patients. So I think that's something we definitely need to focus on. And, you know, the universal patient identifier is something that NCPDP has been focused on for several years through their strategic planning efforts, you know, and have already assimilated, you know, basically a UPI for everyone at this juncture. And to Josh's point, you know, if I don't know that I've got the right patient in hand, then how am I going to make the right clinical care? How am I going to get the right record? And we are fragmented. And I think it's very critical for us to think about in healthcare how we can identify patients individually through an UPI.
Thank you, Kim. I guess I'm up next. And I have a few questions. First question, and I want to make a comment about UPI. And I think for the task force members, I think we can pull some recommendations that have been across the board at ONC to add to it. But we do know that pharmacy struggles with integration with others. So UPI is very sensitive to our particular practice. But what my question is to Rick and Steve in relationship to how has and what are some of the targets that NCPDP is doing in relationship to harmonizing with the HL7 standards?
Thanks, Shelley. This is Rick. I'll just talk to the graphic that I put on there, that the work that's being done with HL7 on looking at how things, starting with the e-care plan on being able to pass information back and forth, and then working with each of our standards to say what's included in the information that is available through the NCPDP standards and HL7 standards, and how do we show the movement of and the transfer of information back and forth between those. We're looking at some opportunity. We also are working closely with HL7 on coordinating through the projects that HL7 is working on to be able to ensure that the work and the information covered under the pharmacy benefits programs can match up as closely as possible to the information that's being created and passed on HL7 as well. We both see a tremendous work ahead of us to continue the effort, but we also see the path to success on these programs that we have identified on standards on both sides, HL7 and NCPDP, on creating the interoperability between the two. We also enjoy members such as the many that are on this call here today that are sitting on both sides and helping to pass information on what's happening within the creation and support of those standards, both through HL7 as well as NCPDP. I don't know, Steve, if you have something to add as well.
I think you covered that very well. I think from our perspective, it's just the interest. We've had more interactions with the folks at HL7 in the last probably year than we have in the last 10. So we are constantly making an effort to reach out to that organization. We have stated publicly many, many times that we believe that it's less about pride of authorship of ongoing standards as it is about making sure that those standards work to their maximum benefit. So that's sort of the theme behind all of our efforts. If you don't mind, Shelley, I'll also just mention that I appreciate the softball about UPI. That obviously many of you know that we've been working on that for a very long time, and it's been quite a journey for us. We're utilizing a non-forward facing enumerator that is provided via Experian Health, but the more important issue is, to your point about, you know, it became so obvious to us that when we were working in the opioid space and when we were working in COVID vaccines and testing, et cetera, that it was increasingly apparent to us that we needed to make sure that that the pharmacists had the right John Smith in order to make those good clinical decisions. And so that's what's led us down that path. But in Experian, I don't want to speak for them, but in the systems that they were looking at, there were incompletes and duplications in the percentage range of between 8% and 18%. And in our minds, that's an accident waiting to happen. And of course, you know that we're not a lobbying organization at NCPDP, but we do go on the Hill doing something we call advocacy. And for those of you who have been really close to this, you recognize that we absolutely we have one Senate office who is pretty staunch against this whole UPI. I think we're going to have to call it something else, but each year we're getting a little closer to making that a reality, we believe. So thank you again for that softball. So
thank you. I have one other question for my colleagues who are lined up, but I did want to ask Josh Holland, since we do have him with us. Josh, one of your products that you helped work for on the pharmacist electronic care plan, and one of the users, large users, are your customers for the pharmacist electronic care plan. Can you give us an update on how well it's been adopted, how well it's been received by the pharmacists who are actually using that, and some of the frustrations that they might have in exchanging with our physician partners or hospitals or other providers?
Yeah, so I think in terms of inside the independent community pharmacy, it's been well adopted. You know, we're probably seeing, I think we're over, you know, a million care plans submitted quarterly now. Like it's respectable. The single biggest problem is that a lot of the payers and the other people who want to receive the care plan don't want to receive all of the care plan, right? And that's the whole point of what Smart on Fire should be. The downside is we've seen a fairly slow adoption rate of people being able to receive Smart on Fire, send and receive that way. So the reality right now is that it's a cool product with a lot of rich information that's really not being used to its full effect outside of pharmacy to pharmacy, or specifically pharmacy to CPSN. Right now, CPSN is doing a lot of breaking that. They're basically ingesting the FHIR care plan and creating reporting out of that to go to other payers or public health places. So we're not quite there yet.
So Josh, just a follow up on that, you mentioned that because the care plan is a CCDA version and also a FHIR version.
Yep.
What do you see the majority of the adoption with your customers in, and those you exchange with? Are they more interested in CCDA? Or are they ready to go with FHIR? Can you talk about that type of adoption level?
Yeah, so most of the pharmacy software groups went with a FHIR implementation, and most of the EHRs in the country had not moved to FHIR yet. I think that boat is clearly tipping, right? All of the big guys have now got FHIR implementation. So I think that barrier is going to come down quickly. But it's still, there's still some practicality missing from it, right? And I think I just saw Kim post in the chat, it's not necessarily fluid. And I think that's right. There needs to be a more fluid way to transfer information back to the people who need it in smaller components. And that's really, once you see the proliferation of Smart on FHIR APIs, that's what you get, right? I dispensed this, here's the lab. I did this, here's what I recommended. And then if you want the whole care plan, you can say, I want to ingest it. That part has not been done yet. And that's only available if you do that on a Smart on FHIR type API implementation.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to Scott.
Yes. On the UPI discussion, I think it was Steve that mentioned an ongoing concern by some legislators. There still is concern in the patient privacy world that, you know, can these identifiers end up facilitating the inappropriate exchange of information or identifying people and their conditions? And I'm not asking anybody about a solution for that. It's just, it's a point that needs to be kept in mind while we're doing this. Anything we can do to address concerns about privacy are certainly or something we need to keep in mind. And I had another one, but we've been talking about UPI so much, I think I lost the other one. So it must not have been terribly important. So,
well, if you think about it, you can definitely
raise my hand again. Yes.
Okay, Hans.
Yes, thank you. I want to go to an early question that I put in the chat. There was a little bit of other discussion back and forth. If we're looking at there's a lot of activity going on defining the standards within NCPDP, within HL7, collaborations, relationship with X12. So there's a lot going on. And there's also awareness, I think, with among many on this call that developing standards takes time. So it's not something that can be done overnight and it's there. But in that area, there are still areas where we could say, we are trying to accelerate, like the HL7 accelerated programs, trying to advance something faster than otherwise would be able to be done. Are there any particular areas that jump out, whether that's already on the list, that really would be the key from a pharmacy perspective to be to require a bigger focus than what we currently have, that there is potential for acceleration? Or are there other areas where we're not yet collaborating that's really in need of collaboration? We just haven't found a way to get people at the table yet. In both categories, I'm curious from any of the presenters, which ones jump out there that we should focus on more than perhaps others? It's not that others are not important, but which ones are jumping out? We need to do more.
Well, this is Rick. I'll jump in first if anyone else wants to join. We have some specific programs that, again, keep leaning to our ability to use the eCare plan on jumpstarting some of the things that the individual standards and interoperability can continue to support. But some of the projects that are most important right now that are active in flight right now is our value-based care and working with our physician partners to allow pharmacists to participate in these VBA programs. More specifically through our precision medicine and the ability for pharmacogenomics to be coordinated through and recognizing the value in the pharmacy for the information that can flow into that. Our programs within things like our digital therapeutics, all of the clinical-based programs that we're looking at, how do we accelerate, as you mentioned, Hans, the opportunities that are there today while recognizing that standards development to support wholeheartedly under the revisions to or creations of standards are going to take some time as far as what needs to be done. We believe that we continue to look at where are the gaps in the information flow and what can we do to accelerate or utilize existing tools and services to be able to support those.
And maybe a follow-up question on that is that if I'm looking at some of the examples used, there are many big areas there, but I'm also noticing that if we, for example, talk about care plan and we have a prescription-focused transactions already, but there are also a number of questions coming in with in the chat and in prior discussions. Would be great if the pharmacist had access to some lab results, or the other way around, the pharmacist has results that should go back. They're not natively or naturally part of prescription transactions, and a care plan might not be the best way to dialogue around that as well. Yet there are standards around that. FHIR has some more, V2 has some more, CCDA has some of those. So it looks like there are opportunities where we already have some standards to advance the communication, but it's not happening. So I'm kind of curious, particularly those ones where we actually do have standards, but getting to that point of exchanging it is hard between pharmacists and providers in particular, perhaps also with patients. Do you see any opportunities there, or what is it that would help us advance that so we can close those gaps as well while we are working on some of the big boulders along the way too?
I think, you know, similar to what's happening on the accelerators on the HL7 side is by having opportunities where players are going to step up to the table with specific examples and concepts that can move us forward by looking at what we have in place today and how we can move those forward. We have on the NCPDP side, we have a foundation that we put together that can help support the driving of the adoption of programs that players that are interested in showing the value, improving the ability to utilize standards and the process in place to interface are important. I think a lot of it has to do with making sure that we do have people that can step up to the plate and want to participate specifically on moving it forward and not just conceptually.
Thank you.
Ike.
Thank you. Not sure how to frame this question. One of the challenges I think that may be out there is looking at when medication information or related information is not coded into a medication list by a physician or other care provider. And another space in that is looking at drugs that are in clinical trials may not fit in to catalog numbers that are not showing up. And I think that creates some challenges as we're looking at contraindicated lists or medical conflicts. Is that really an issue that needs to get addressed? And what do we need to do something in that space to make it easier for pharmacists to be able to reconcile potential conflicts, because there are things that are often not in the medication lists in a patient's file, but are still maybe of interest to pharmacists?
Well, if nobody wants to answer that, maybe I can help Ike in answering your question. We have a couple of work groups that were task groups within both NCPDP and also a subgroup out of the HL7 EHR work group that's under the provider burden that's working on the medication lists, and also on the NCPDP side, working on the standardized medication profile, which will also incorporate medication lists. This will help reconciliation at the point of contact with the patient, both on engaging the patient in medication reconciliation, but also in helping the pharmacist do medication reconciliation through the pharmacist patient care process. And those are all things that pharmacists do. What we have is the difficulty in obtaining all the information that's needed in within our systems. Today, most of the medication information is based off of the dispensing claim, and that becomes, and there's a lot of anomalies that are within that. So and I don't want to take away from our presenters, but there's a lot of work that's being done. It is a very tough topic to get through. The HL7 pharmacy work group has a guidance on medication lists and how to use the FHIR resources for medications, for medication lists and the exchange of medication lists. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done in that arena.
Right. So, that was kind of my thought, is that I knew there was some work going on in that space, but looking and taking the advantage of the opportunity to provide some additional feedback to ONC and other organizations, that this really is something that does require continued and ongoing focus, because we're really talking about patient safety issues in a very, very real world. And as we're looking at potentially expanding the opportunity to get more information, that's fantastic, but it also needs to be reliable, accurate, timely, and complete for it to really be useful and not put patients' health at risk.
I totally agree. And one of the things that we've identified in some of this effort as we're looking into the medication list, there are different types of medication lists. You have your active list, you have a reconciled list, you have your discontinued medication list, which is also very important, including the reasons that a medication is discontinued. And recently we just identified another type of list of a private list that it needs patient consent to share, that would follow the CFR 42 Part 2 rules. So we have identified that there are different types of lists that need to be exchanged, not just the list of that we think that the patient is taking, but we need to understand a true reconciled medication list that isn't just about prescriptions being dispensed, but over the counter supplements, other types of consumption, yes, by patients. And these are all very important if we're going to have a comprehensive medication management process take place.
Yeah, so I think somewhere in there in the our recommendations, we need to not necessarily get entirely in the weed, but make sure that we're reminding folks that this is an outstanding issue that needs attention.
Thank you. Pooja.
Yeah, I want to go back to, and I put this in the chat about the chattiness, right, of this. And Josh, thank you for commenting on that. It just made me realize there's, one of the recommendations, we met as a small group last week to talk about capturing of race and ethnicity. And one of the things that we talked about was, should we consider making a recommendation around bi-directional certification of some of the e-prescribing standards? So I'm thinking of script standard, right? RxChange, RxFill. We know that EHRs have had to put that in. Is there an opportunity for us, to think about that certification on the pharmacy side? Because that will get to some of the chattiness, right? Like, we know that those standards, those transactions exist, but how do we make sure that they're being utilized, and incorporated? So just something for the group to be thinking about, and would love to, if any of the panelists or presenters have some thoughts on that as well.
Well, Pooja, it's Rick. I would agree. A lot of our standards that were developed on the script side specifically were originally developed on passing information to the pharmacy. And as we continue to evolve and the clinical opportunities in pharmacy continue to evolve, the ability to pass information in the opposite direction becomes more important. And we've begun looking already at some of the messaging standards and saying, can they be initiated by either party in passing the information, and how does the standard change accordingly? And I think that's a great opportunity to be able to utilize an existing standard to implement the passing of information in different directions, including, you know, expanding upon the ability to include other parties that are important to the clinical decisions. And at some point, also looking at how does a patient get informed and make informed decisions along the way as well. So I think utilizing our existing standards and just looking at the path at which they take today may change and should change as we're looking forward to, you know, how each of the participants play a role in the exchange of clinical information moving forward.
Thank you, Rick. Afton.
Thanks, Shelley. Just listening to the discussion, I just wanted to take a step back and level set on just the expectations or realities of pharmacies today as we want to have seamless partner data exchange, but we're still very, very early on in this process. And bidirectional exchange is still, in some cases, done manually. And we're still trying to figure out, you know, how to obtain data and get it on the prem, but next steps are even getting it in the cloud. And some of that hasn't even really been thought of how to do that yet. So, you know, we want to get to the space where we're using our standards to be able to get there, but just wanted to, you know, level set of reality and how things are kind of being done now. And it's really something we want to do, but we're still in the baby step mode. So anything small, actionable, small bites would be really helpful in terms of getting us to where we need to be.
Thank you, Afton. Scott.
And building on Afton, just as there had to be support for smaller providers in implementing and having required EHRs and patient management, you have to think about that in terms of all the participants. I mean, there are the smaller pharmacies, and there are the bigger pharmacies, and there are the bigger pharmacy system vendors and the smaller system vendors. And that goes for, you know, pick any endpoint you want to talk about. There's a range of people. So how can this be a viable thing, especially if it's going to be a requirement? How can it be viable for that full range of participants? And it's a forever problem, but one that we just need to acknowledge.
Thank you, Scott. Afton?
Yeah, just to follow up on that. Oh, Scott, I appreciate that comment. And, you know, we have dozens of partners that we want to be able to exchange data with, but something as simple as, you know, trying to figure out how to even like SFPT problems, so data exchange and decrypting on the fly and small things like that, little minute details, you know, don't enable programs to partner with us because we don't have a single capability. And kind of looking forward to that and looking how different organizations want to consume their information, what they need, what they use to encrypt files or gather information is really important. So we need to think about what our partners are doing as well and how we can all work together.
Thank you, Afton. I guess this is to Rick and Steve. We know that the workflow for the long-term post-acute care setting, especially when we're dealing with the script standard and the exchange of that information, is very is unusual, to say the least, what we call a three-way communication instead of this bidirectional, even push one-way type of communication in the script standard. And one of the things that they did to solve that problem was to utilize what we call the a copy of this to be shared with the physician and the facility that's taking care of those patients, or a home healthcare agency that's taking care of those patients, so that could help with the medication reconciliation process also. And we, so I'd want to know if how NCPDP utilizes really looking at some of these anomalies that take place in some of the specialty areas like specialty pharmacy or long-term post-acute care, or some of the not normal community pharmacy types of exchanges.
Well, Rick can probably give you a better perspective from the standards development perspective, but I think what I would just say in general is something that Hans brought up earlier, and that is, you know, we can't boil the ocean, you know, tomorrow. So we do really well, as you know, Shelley, because you've been in it for many, many years. We do really well with use cases and addressing those use cases. And it seems to me that the challenge with all of this is determining which of those should be prioritized and how we should, and then we go about creating our task groups, or in some cases, work groups to address those specific issues. I think that's how we will be moving forward, because we've done it in the past as an organization and we've been pretty good at it. So that's the way. But if you're asking the question, you know, long-term post-acute care, where does that fit in that priority? You'll have to tell me. So.
I don't want to tell you on that. But Rick, did you have anything to add?
I mean, I would just tag is what I said earlier as well, and it's exactly what Steve was just mentioning. By building those use cases and having the specific opportunities of implementing a challenge, that creates our task groups, our work that needs to be done, the opportunities of putting together potential changes in the standards, but it also addresses some of the things we just talked about on script, is looking at how we do in the passing of information back and forth. Sometimes it's just looking at it from a different angle, but we need the participants that are interested in joining a task group and getting involved and coming forward with a use case that is a challenge that they have, and seeing, is there something that can be done today within the existing standards? Or is there something that we need to address to be able to support moving forward?
And I thank you. And let's go to the HL7 side on this. And I'm not sure, you know, being involved in HL7, I know that they don't look at the standards the same way that we do within NCPDP, especially when it comes to some of these specialty areas, pediatrics, long-term care, rehab, and so you don't have a separate work group. It's just integrated into the entire HL7 process. And so I think they use a similar use case type of aspect or a profile aspect, such as dealing with pharmacy too. Although we do have a pharmacy work group at HL7. I don't know if there's any task force members that want to address that, or if the NCPDP or any of the other presenters want to address that difference. Scott?
Yes. So I've been involved in both for some time, HL7 and NCPDP, and both of them, well, historically, HL7 has been a bit more academic, but especially with FHIR, they're academically rigorous, but they've become more the use cases have become more important. You can't just say you want this piece of information. There needs to be a scenario around what it is and why you're moving it around and what's the intent, so that it can fit into everything else. There, HL7 is broken up into various areas of interest: the work groups, pharmacy, patient empowerment, but then there's also EHRs, just EHRs in general, and there's security in general. So it's a matter of coordinating between those groups. NCPDP historically has been much more use case oriented because it was more business oriented initially, but it's and that has served it very well, because you don't have as many standards developed that then aren't really used. because they only get developed when somebody says there's something that needs to be developed. HL7's come more close to that, and I think that's benefited HL7 a great deal. So really, it's, you know, I think we need to more often even force people to think in use cases. It's like, there's a problem, this needs to be fixed. Well, explain to us what the problem is and how is it impacting everything. And if we can keep that kind of focus, even when we're doing our work now, that will be beneficial, I think. That's me.
Thank you, Scott. Kim, you gave a great presentation, especially on this new group that's dealing with value-based care. And so what, I know that you're looking at moving forward with this new work group 20 for identifying the gaps. Which gaps are probably the most important that we identify? We know that data is extremely important, and we need to be able to exchange the data, especially with pharmacies, as we move to value-based care.
I think it's between pharmacies between pharmacies and pharmacists, but also with the other primary care providers, right? So if you think about the transition to value-based arrangements and value-based care and coordination of care with pharmacists, being able to not only capture the relevant, mostly clinical-related information, Shelley, it's really clinical-related information. And Hans brought this up earlier, labs as an example, right? Our standards do have place marks in them to capture and conduct lab-related information or other clinical-related services, but we don't have this fluid way to just get it over. The e-care plan can do that, right? But what's not coming back is what action was taken by the primary care provider. If you think about a value-based arrangement, it's this collaboration. So there has to be this fluid data exchange, but more specifically in real time. You know, I don't think you can take action on something that you don't have real-time access to. So we don't know quite yet what we don't know. We are in the process of going, okay, what elements did we find that we're missing from a clinical perspective? And how important are they to what you all have been talking about today, particular use cases? What particular use cases or pilots need to be focused on because they are the most advantageous for patient care and coordination? So that's what we're digging into next, Shelley. So we should know in September what that really looks like. And can report back to the task force on what we're finding.
Thank you, Kim. Pooja?
Sorry, I lost my mute button for a minute. So I want to go back to what Scott was talking about, you know, really kind of this HL7 and NCPDP coordination. And I know there was that slide that Rick, that you showed where you know, we're showing that was one of the strategic initiatives, right, to show kind of this cross-pollination. But I think this whole discussion of use cases is getting me thinking, you know, there's situations, and I'll just use one example of specialty medications, right, that is a great example where, you know, some specialty medications are covered under the pharmacy benefit, some are covered under the medical benefit. On those that are covered on the pharmacy side, right? Like we have all of these standards in place where you can prescribe, you can do the prior authorization, you can do that all the way from end to end and get that dispensed. If a specialty medication is covered under a medical benefit, you know, you fall into this completely different workflow, right? That was very manual until, you know, some of course, the Da Vinci implementation guides are coming out for prior authorization, things like that. But it's such a separate workflow. And so, you know, one thing that we have been trying to do, I know, you know, several people have been working on different implementation guides and work kind of between NCPDP and HL7 is how do we make sure that our standards are working together? So, for example, there was created a specialty implementation guide that allows, essentially a provider to submit a enrollment form to a specialty pharmacy by using FHIR to pull clinical data elements and pass that along. And I feel like in this whole discussion of use cases and pharmacy interoperability, like we need to be looking at those kind of use cases and saying, where is there overlap? And then how do we get these standards to work together? And I don't know if there's enough, and maybe you know, I'm trying to think of a recommendation, right, for ONC, you know, maybe part of it is just bringing some of these forward, whether it's through education, whether it's through other things where we're saying, look, you know, in some of these cases where there are these areas where we're needing clinical and pharmacy data to work together, you know, this is how, you know, these are things that have been done, right? And then how do we bring that forward? So I just think it's important for us to note, you know, especially as we move forward with our recommendations of how do we, you know, how do we get pharmacy and clinical data speaking together, you know, and so anyway, just some thoughts for going forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Hans?
Yeah, I want to pick up where Pooja was talking about on what can ONC do? What are some of the things that are potential recommendations in light of our task to number A or little A? And I think one of the things there that we need to think about in this conversation, there are a number of areas that are being addressed where industry is making advances and certain things can only go so fast. So they might go fast enough that they are fast as you can go. And therefore, there is not as much need for an ONC perhaps to provide an assist to help move forward. But there might be other areas where there are. And in the past, we have seen that in a couple of different ways on how ONC can help the industry advance where it is helpful to collectively work together on it. Plenty of areas where that's not necessary, where things can be done, but there are areas where we have to do it consistently across the board. So you look at accelerators that particularly ONC has been part of in that context within HL7 is around the FAST accelerator, which started as an ONC initiative to see how networking could be advanced and do it at scale. Or you see currently the collaboration between ONC and CDC with Helios to address a variety of public health use cases. Are there among, and that's for the task force to ponder, among the discussion we had today, are there activities that if we let them go at the pace they are, the focus that they have, are not making the progress as fast or as focused as we need to? Is that something where ONC can be asked to help by way of LEAP, by way of accelerator participation, by way of other means to help accelerate it? I think that's one of the challenging parts. Which ones of these rise to the top in that context? And so far, I'm hearing a lot of good work that is all progressing at a good pace. I'm also having a hard time to find out what's that niche where we are missing something. So I'm curious whether others might have opinions about that, what that might be.
Any one of our presenters want to comment on that?
This is Kim. I think Christian in the chat notated very effectively about the profession of a pharmacist, right? And the pharmacist having access to, you know, the patient chart. They're a consented party to the care. And I don't think that's fluidly happening, but if we could prioritize those pieces of the chart that are most applicable, I think that would be a good use of the task force time, is what is the key priority areas for pharmacists obtaining patient chart detail? You know, is it immunizations? Is it labs? Is it, you know, ADTs, you know, transfers from different facility types? I think that would be a good use of the time, because it is incumbent upon the pharmacist to have that information to be a holistic part of the care team and help coordinate on care.
And I would just tag on, I think, to where Pooja was going a few minutes ago, and that is that more consistency and workflow and understanding between where a particular benefit is falling in, how that kind of drops off when it's understood that it doesn't follow the common path of medical or pharmacy, and it passes back and forth. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us to find ways of creating a more common workflow and information sharing back and forth that allows that common workflow to continue, or at least more disclosure of where the information sits and the type of benefit that it is, that would allow either from a medical side, but specifically what we're talking about here on the pharmacy side of understanding how and how to get the information or how to submit information when it's necessary.
Thank you, Rick. I'm going to take the last 5 minutes to drive a conversation. I'd like to hear from our panelists. This is one of our charges in really in helping us form our recommendations. How can ONC help facilitate adoption and use of standards to support data exchange for pharmacy-based clinical services? I'd like to start with Josh first.
At its core, I want people are kind of like, I'll start with HL7 is a great standard, right? But there's kind of a joke in the developer community that once you've seen one HL7 implementation, you've seen one HL7 implementation. The standard gets non-standardized. People will slide things into different areas. What I think we need from that is a firm, not recommendation, but a firm, this is how you're going to do it. And I don't think somebody has to tell the children how to do it. And unfortunately, sometimes I'm in that group of children. I need to be told what to do.
Thanks, Josh. Kim?
Yeah, I'll tag team on Josh. And I put this in my, I think slide 8 is there needs to be some specificity around the criteria, around the standards, and potentially even certification of systems and how they're going to interoperate. Tell these systems, the pharmacy EHRs, which is really not a term for pharmacy EHR, you got pharmacy management systems. But if we're going to establish this ecosystem where there's data fluidity happening between the different provider types, then we're going to have to set up a roadmap in which to tell those systems, you know, how they'll interoperate. So certification and standards, data exchange, implementation guides that are easy to comprehend and follow along between the different type of provider types, including pharmacy. So certification and standards, I think, is going to be a big key piece to making sure that we can interoperate.
Thank you, Kim. Steve?
Yes. One of the things that we have been watching is grant proposals at the federal level in encouraging interoperability among the various SDOs. And so we have been interested in making sure that, frankly, all the three, at least the three relevant SDOs that are all attempting to work together, create some level of equity in terms of grant funding opportunities. So,
and Rick, I'll give you the final say on this topic.
I kind of bring it all together. Yeah, I mean, I think what we just talked about on workflow and this interoperability between to have ONC help us to sponsor the ability to drive the benefits on both sides of the fence, but more specifically, how pharmacy can and should interact more specifically and more consistently on the standards that are in place today and how you implement between and allow pharmacists to be able to access things like charts, be able to pass along information that's important from a pharmacy's perspective to medical, but more importantly, making sure that whether it's a medical benefit or a pharmacy benefit, if it's a clinical opportunity to move forward, that that the pharmacist has the ability within, whether it's a small independent or a large group that has, you know, significant resources, that we have a more consistent implementation and a support from the industry, and more specifically from ONC, to be able to say, I think a bit to Josh's initial point is, tell us how we play the game and making sure everybody's playing it consistently.
Thank you. We have 1 minute left, and I just want to bring up a topic before we go into public comment, especially to our panelists. And I know some of our panelists have to leave, but we know that there's such a problem with drug shortages right now and the communication of drug shortages between care providers. And just wanted to get your thoughts on what you think we might be able to do to help with that transparency on the the availability of certain medications, both for the patient and also for the prescriber and pharmacy. Anyone want to take 30 seconds?
Shelley, I'll just mention, you're absolutely right. Those are one of those things that keep us all up at night, because at any given time, there's somewhere between 250 and 400 drugs, many of them very important medications, life-saving in many cases, that are in short supply. And so I think ultimately we have something that we've been looking at called the facilitator model. And you know that we've been discussing that and working through that with regard to the opioid crisis as well as the COVID vaccines and testing and treatment aspects. And matter of fact, there's a multi-state pilot going on right now on the COVID side right now related to lab information available to pharmacists. So bi-directional. So we think, driven to its fullest extent, it could actually help provide that early warning sign in terms of when drugs are in short supply.
Yeah, I'm going to hold your thought there because if we don't have any public comment, we'll come back to this, but it's a topic we'll be discussing later. Mike, go ahead for public comment. I apologize, we're about 1 minute late on that.
Okay. No problem at all. We're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6. To mute and unmute your line. So let's pause this for a moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand. Not seeing any hands raised, I'll turn it back to you, Shelley.
So Steve, let's finish your discussion on this and the NCPDP facilitator model on helping with that communication on drug shortages and other inventory issues.
Yeah, well, all I was saying was is that the model itself was created in a way to ultimately accommodate any and all prescribed medications. And so if you move that to its fullest potential over time, you not only create the opportunity for things like post-marketing surveillance, but also utilization, and we think that there is some level of opportunity there as we talk about drug shortages specifically.
And what I'm talking about, Steve, and others on the panel, is more on a clinical standpoint. We need to be able to come up with different recommendations for substitutes for the drugs that are in shortage. We're facing this right now. We need that pharmacist provider communication in relationship to this, and also communication with the patient. This is a clinical issue, not just a drug inventory shortage issue, because we don't have that bi-directional exchange, including with the script standard, for changing or making a recommendation for a change in a prescription because there is a drug shortage issue. This is one of a good reason for making that moving the Change Rx to more of a not optional. And yeah. So I'd like to take it from the clinical standpoint, not necessarily from the drug shortage itself standpoint. I don't know if anyone.
Well, it's obviously a very important issue, and as you rightly point out, the pharmacist would be in the perfect position not only to understand the concern about the drug shortage, but also to be able to provide therapeutic alternatives, and thus the need for bidirectional communication.
Thank you, Pooja.
Yeah, Shelley, I think you bring up a really good point about the patient, I think, and it looks like Rick put this information in the chat, right? We've got this now potential information flowing between pharmacies, between providers and pharmacies, but what about the patient, right? And some kind of information to them. So I think just as a task force, we need to also, you know, I was always reminded of that as we were going to USCDI, what about the patient, what about the patient? So we just need to make sure we keep that in mind through our recommendations through all of this.
Christian.
Yeah, Shelley, I just, thank you. I just wanted to echo kind of the clinical needs for these bidirectional communications with EHR systems. We fight these routinely in our day-to-day operations and just trying to everything from clarifying, but also to make recommendations. So lack of adoption by EHR systems of certain transactions that could facilitate that communication around product availability and or therapeutic interchanges is really part of the encumbrance that we face. They are available, but they're not routinely adopted. So to me, that would be an area where we might think about making some recommendations that would, you know, as part of the certification processes of EHRs.
Thank you. I think, did we have somebody else? And we dropped it, I'm sorry. Is there somebody else that wanted to make a comment, especially from the panel on this topic?
Well, this is Rick. I would just make the comment on the information going to the patient is critical. I kind of referenced it earlier on. I believe that we could utilize the resources that we have in the industry to help us understand how patient involvement of the prescription coming from the prescriber through to the dispenser, but including information going to the patient about that prescription that's coming, if there's a shortage or unavailability of product, some options, or at least informing them so that they have the ability to have a conversation either with the prescriber or with the pharmacy on alternatives. Also giving a more patient selection, understanding about price of prescription, affordability. There's a lot of things that we can start creating a better ecosystem where traditionally our technology healthcare has let the patient sit on the side and wait for the information to come to them instead of actually involving them in the process, which, you know, for all of us as patients, I think it's important to us to be more involved in our own healthcare.
Thank you, Rick. Alexis?
Yeah, just to echo some of what Rick was just saying, I think on the, you know, from the patient perspective and caregiver perspective, that care coordination piece can also get lost. So I don't think that patients are necessarily always waiting on the sidelines for information. We are always waiting for information, but when we are waiting to fill a prescription and not getting the information we need about a shortage or about a change of dose or a prior authorization request, et cetera, we are active in that process because we are stuck in the middle and we are quite burdened with the task of resolving these issues on our own because systems are not interoperable and speaking with each other. And when you leave the patient out of it, we also can't help facilitate it. So I guess it's both ends I'm trying to say. So we need the information so that we can then help facilitate it, but we shouldn't be burdened from beginning to end on trying to facilitate that process. And I'll just give you a quick, you know, user case. Monthly, I have a prescription that monthly now because of shortages is never available in the dose that I need it in. So every single month I have to reach out because the pharmacy has not told me, the prescriber is unaware, and I need to reach out and say, hey, how come this isn't filled yet? And then I find out, oh, that dose isn't available. Nobody behind the scenes has coordinated with my physician to find out where it's available. If it's not available, how are we going to change the dose? Which dose? So I totally am for the pharmacist being engaged in the process of helping make those decisions for the provider, with the provider, to decide which dose is best. But the patient also needs to be in a shared decision-making process about what they want to do. Do they want to reduce the dose? Do they want to increase the dose? Do they want to switch to a different drug? But I'll tell you, with this particular use case as well, sometimes it also involves getting another prior authorization or getting an override from the insurance. So all of this, you know, is just, again, just a push for keeping patients in the middle, but then also not burdening them with having to fix a broken system and get help with the care coordination.
Very well said, Lex. Thank you so much. That was perfect. I really appreciate it. Well, we're almost at the top of the hour. I'm going to turn it to Hans to give his last comments, and then we'll close this down.
Well, good. Thank you. So We are going to go next, not next week, but in 2 weeks on to the second part of task two. But as you get updates on the homework assignments, there are a couple of tabs to keep in mind. One is the very last one with tracking of tasks, of follow-ups, where various names of task force members have been put and the topic that they were going to prepare some recommendations, drafting of those. So have a look at those. If your name isn't there, we will be following up to over the next couple of weeks to get updates, as well as that there is the task two recommendation tab where you can start to and continue to fill in thoughts, suggestions, and working towards recommendations. We will be working offline to see whether that may need to be adjusted in format. But until that happens, please continue to add your comments and thoughts as well there. So thank you for today. Really great updates, great discussion, great thoughts, and looking forward to the follow-up on how we're going to translate those into recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. And for the task force members, please review the spreadsheet. You'll have 2 weeks to make your recommendations for public comments, and we'll be doing the follow-up, as Hansa said, and please continue to participate in updating in the spreadsheet. Thank you, everyone, and have a nice day.